Scotch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films, The Hunt, I Still Believe, Bloodshot, and Wendy, which might be the last films that are actually released wide from Hollywood for the rest of the year. Who knows? It's going insane out there. But in a plan to kind of keep everybody calm and collected, I'm also going to be talking about the new show Devs on FX on Hulu. And then, of course, we're going to be talking about some news in the trailer park and the home cinema roundup featuring 21 Bridges. I know that's an older film from a couple weeks ago, but I finally got a chance to watch it. More on that later. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinGarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
The news this week is the coronavirus, and the reason the coronavirus is permeating everything, it's not just because it's a global pandemic, it's not just because it's in the United States, but some real things are happening in the United States, and in particular, it's affecting stuff that I do even. I mean, not just me as a person. I live in Columbus, Ohio, so we're under lockdown already, where you can't go into public events with more than 100 people, and they've shut down school for 3 weeks. So there's a lot of on people's mind for movies, because what else are you going to be doing when you're shut home for 2 or 3 weeks during a coronavirus quarantine? At the same time, Hollywood itself is shutting down, and we're not just talking about shutting down Disneyland and Disney World and these theme parks and sporting events and concerts and that sort of thing. We're talking about shutting down movies. We already had No Time to Die get moved to November because of fears of the coronavirus. It came out this week that John Krasinski is moving A Quiet Place Part 2 later into the frame. So that was really the only thing that was going to open next week. That's off the release schedule. Fast and Furious 9 is getting bumped to next year at this time. Let's hope there's not another global pandemic for that. And then just this week, at the end of the week, Disney came out and said Mulan, which was supposed to come out on the 27th, that's on hold indefinitely, along with the Fox properties, The New Mutants and Antlers, which are April releases, those are being held, which means the next new release that's still scheduled, the next new release that's still on the docket, is Trolls World Tour, which doesn't even open until April 10th. And even then, we'll see, because that's going to be a big movie that you're going to want to bring kids to, and we'll see where we are with the coronavirus then. Who knows? That might be bumped as well. This is a reality that you're going to have. And I mean, I know it's kind of a panicky thing, but, you know, calming people down a little bit, just because Disney and Sony and other places are moving these things out of this release schedule, it's not because they think that the world's ending. It's because it's going to impact their box office. Right now, there's a lot of people who don't want to go into large gatherings or into big groups. And particularly in Columbus, Ohio, they said no groups over 100. And I know in other states are like limiting it to 250 or 1,000, depending on the severity that they're looking at the potential rise of infection. These are precautionary things so that it inhibits the spread of it as much as you can. The virus is going to be out there. It's going to spread. But they want to slow it down so it doesn't overload the hospitals and the medical facilities. So these are smart moves, and these are precautionary moves. These are moves that are the corporate equivalent of going to the store and buying a couple extra things of bread, or maybe an extra roll of toilet paper if you can find it. This is not the equivalent of panic buying 512 rolls of toilet paper. If you need that many, you probably need to go to the doctor anyways, if you need that many just to get through 2 weeks, okay? So, I mean, although there's a lot happening and there's constant developments, I wouldn't panic too much about it just because Hollywood's moving these things out, because it requires people to go to the movie theaters. It requires people to go into the public in large groups, and that's naturally going to be suppressed now. And that's going to impact the box office. And so for a movie like Mulan, which could be a huge blockbuster, they don't want to open it up at a time when nobody wants to go to the theater. And so right now, we don't have any big releases in the immediate future where you're going to have big long lines and huge crowds. I mean, like Bloodshot this weekend, I really don't think that that's going to bring more than 100 people in any theater anywhere, just because it's a relatively small movie. It's not a big deal. It's not like Black Widow is, I think, the next one that's probably that huge event tentpole movie, but that's not for another 6 weeks. We'll see what happens when Disney moves that. And I wouldn't be worried if that got moved too, because again, this is the studios reading whether people would actually go see the movie, not whether they want to see the movie, but whether they just go outside and go to the theater to see it. But this is a great opportunity for some smaller films, especially ones that are going straight on demand, or a lot of the streaming services, Hulu and Prime and Netflix. This is going to be a great time for them because everyone's staying home and people are going to want to watch stuff. So over the next couple of weeks, it's going to affect how I cover movies, because over the next 2 weeks, there's no movies coming out. So we're going to be talking about more streaming services. I'm going to be going back and looking at some films that I've been sent on DVD or Blu-ray that I never got a chance to watch. Might as well watch those and cover those and talk about some vintage stuff, because I'm still here to help provide entertainment and I'm still here to provide guidance. I'm not going anywhere. I am currently healthy and I hope that that doesn't change. But we will get through this, people, together, along with popcorn at home and snacks and chips and, you know, maybe an adult beverage or two. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first film I want to talk about is Antebellum, which is opening, at least according to the release schedule, on April 24th.
We're expected to be seen, not heard. But we are the future. Our time is now.
I'm coming!
I can tell you're special.
What is the plan?
We go tonight. The world has to find out about this.
I can't tell much about this movie from the trailer, and I kind of love that. So many movies nowadays are so spoilery with their trailers. They give away plot points and twists and ideas. It's nice to see a trailer that's not playing all of its hand in one fell swoop. Now, this is produced, I believe, by Jordan Peele, so he's getting his hands on a lot of other diverse projects that fall into either surreal or potentially horror movie element, and I love that. I love the fact that we got two great horror movies from Jordan Peele. We got Candyman remake coming up, and even though he's just producing it, he's not directing it. I'm looking forward to that. I'm looking forward to Antebellum just to see what happens with this. I don't even know what this movie's about, but I'm intrigued. Now let's talk about the next one, which is Soul, which opens on June 19th. Hopefully this whole coronavirus thing will at least be managed by then and we won't be moving stuff out of the summer time frame. But for right now, Soul opens on June 19th.
I'm Joe. I teach middle school band. Got it, go for it. Today started out as the best day of my life.
Back here tonight, first show's at 7.
Yes!
Gonna say Joe Gardner. I did it. I got the gig.
Must have been sudden for you.
There I am. What are we waiting for?
Wait.
Like any Pixar movie, this is really thinking outside of the box. This is thinking outside of the box much more than even Onward was. Onward, as much as out of the box as that was, it did fit into that fractured fairy tale Shrek level of entertainment. Soul really reminds me of stuff like Inside Out or Up, these really out-of-the-box concept movies that you'd never be able to do if you weren't Pixar. Basically, the story setup is, the best as you can tell from the trailer, this guy who's a musician dies and doesn't feel he's fulfilled his life, and his soul goes to the other world, and it's him trying to get back. And it looks real high concept, but it looks sweet and wonderful, and it looks exactly like what a Pixar movie in sort of their golden age really means to me. So I'm really looking forward to Soul. This trailer really sold me on it. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about I Still Believe and Wendy. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump into the movie reviews with I Still Believe. This film tells the story of Christian rock singer Jeremy Camp's relationship with his first wife, who had cancer.
You brought your guitar.
Well, you asked me to.
Do you want to play for us?
Oh, no.
All right, guys, we've got Jeremy Camp here.
All right.
Find me in the river. Find me on my knees. In the river I will wait.
You're going to be healed.
What if I'm not supposed to be healed?
Don't say that.
You couldn't tell much about the movie from that trailer. And that's actually representative of the film, to be real about this. I'm going to start off by saying, look, I don't know Jeremy Camp. I never met his first wife. I don't know anything about them more than what I've seen in this movie. I have nothing against them, and I have the utmost sympathy, and my heart reaches out to anybody who's touched by tragedy like this. Cancer is a horrible thing, and I really feel for him and his first wife's family. I mean, this is a tragic story. So I'm not at all saying anything about the people involved. But this is not a good movie. And here's why. Anytime there's a based on a true story kind of movie that brings in the people who actually were involved in it, whether it's a biopic or whether it's telling a true story like this, it's always tough when you bring the people in who are personally, intimately involved, because you don't get a very good story out of that. For example, that was one of my criticisms of the movie Race, the Jesse Owens story, because it was partly done by Jesse Owens' family. And of course they didn't want him to look bad at all, because he's a hero to them. And that's nothing against Jesse Owens, but everybody's flawed. And if you take all the flaws out of a character, you don't get a very good character. And that's basically what happens here. This movie is very cheesy, and it's very corny, and it's very schmaltzy. It tries very well. And I will say it overcomes a lot of the problems that I normally see with faith-based movies. It doesn't have the terrible acting that shows up where you look at it and be like, oh, that person's obviously a deacon at the church that helped get this movie made. And that's why they got that speaking role, because they're terrible. There's none of those moments in this, which I commend the movie for. But the problem is it's so close to Jeremy Camp, who was involved in this whole thing. It's so close to his story. That, I mean, she's put on such a pedestal. The character, the wife, which it's showing him falling in love with her. But the problem is there's no depth to her character. I know nothing about her character aside from the fact that she's kind of has an interest in astronomy. I was that's what I realized about the movie, is as much as it just heaps his praise and adoration on her, aside from her being a singer and kind of being cute, there's no more depth to it. You don't know anything about her. You don't know anything about her life. You don't know anything about her wishes and her dreams. And I don't even know what her major is in the college where they're going. It so worships her on this that there's no depth to her character. And even when there is depth, it's kind of a smarmy depth. Because at the beginning, he's attracted to her, but she clearly has something going on with this other guy. And this is a huge character flaw. Somebody who's like, well, this guy likes me, but I really don't like him. And I kind of like this other guy, but I don't want to tell the guy that I don't like him because I really like all the attention. I just want to be friends, but I want you to treat me like a girlfriend. And she does come across as that. And I'm just like, well, I hated people like that. I ran into people like that growing up, and I always got away from them because that's not good behavior in a person. And that's kind of how she's founded in this movie. And then it becomes more about him and his singing career. And I'm like, well, what is it? Is this a movie about you becoming a Christian rock singer? Or is this a movie about you falling in love with your wife? And then there's parts in there in terms of like when they're showing her getting medical diagnoses and things that are happening. I'm like, what doctor's in charge of her care? Because it makes no sense. I mean, like, there's a whole point that we're like, oh, the cancer's gone. I'm like, wait, didn't you just say it was all over her ovaries, like, in the last scene? And then suddenly you were getting ready there to do a hysterectomy, and you're like, oh, well, I guess the cancer's gone. That's not how it works. But anyways, this movie is not for me. It's not my kind of film. It's schmaltzy, it's cheesy, it's corny. It lays it on thick. If you love that sort of thing, you're going to weep and cry and have a wonderful time living vicariously through this tragic story. And to me, I just rolled my eyes. It was just the filmmakers were too close to the subject matter. It was not very well focused, and it had some levels of absurdity that didn't need to be in there. So I'm going to have to say, I'm sorry, but I still believe. I'm a cold-hearted SOB, but it sucked.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's move into the next film, which is Wendy. This loose and more pragmatic adaptation of the Peter Pan legend tells the story of a girl who runs away from home and ends up on an island where children never grow up.
Remember the voice in your head? The one that said, sneak away.
Crazy! Wendy, wait!
Here is the place it came from.
Where are the mother? You will never grow up!
Never!
So began the legend of Peter, the boy who would not grow up.
This is made by the people who did Beasts of the Southern Wild. If you remember that movie, which is almost 10 years ago, I think. It was like a 2011 movie, if I'm not mistaken. And that was a real interesting movie because it dealt with some of the local legends and mythologies of the American South and had some really neat stuff in there. And that's the movie that introduced us to Quvenzhané Wallace, who is, of course, she was in the Annie remake a couple years ago. And that was really neat. I mean, it was this weirdly pragmatic down to earth where you're almost a slice of life. You don't have an ongoing plot through it. So they apply that same element here. The problem is everybody knows the Peter Pan story. And I think it's a neat idea to take it and put it in a very different context, in a very different setting. It would have made a great 30-minute short film. If this were an Oscar-nominated short, I think it would have been quite interesting. The problem is they have to drag it out to like an hour and 50 minutes. And while it has some very beautiful cinematography and some very wonderful moments and some fascinating takes on the Peter Pan legend, like, for example, I mean, this isn't as magical as the Peter Pan thing. You don't have Tinkerbell flying around and you don't have them soaring through the air and they're not dressed up in feathers, you know, fighting pirates with Tiger Lily. And I mean, it's not the Disney Peter Pan. It's very down to earth at times. And they give an explanation, a very loose explanation, that something at this island keeps them from growing old. But if you lose your happy thoughts as a child, you will grow old. And so they have those elements there, but they struggle too much to ground it. And it just kind of gets dull and it's hard to see where the plot goes, because these filmmakers aren't plot-driven filmmakers. And so it just doesn't quite have a follow-through. Like I said, if it were like a 20, 30-minute movie, I think it would have been fascinating. It would have been beautiful. But this one just drags and slags, and it just takes too long. So I'm going to have to say that Wendy kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about The Hunt and Bloodshot. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews by talking about The Hunt. You remember The Hunt. This was a movie that was supposed to come out last year, but because of political pressure and following the horrible Dayton and El Paso shootings, they pushed away the release date. And so then they decided to release The Hunt on a weekend where nothing's happening politically and nobody's panicking about anything. How's that working out for you guys? This movie can't catch a break. I mean, whether you like this movie or not, whether you're going to support this movie or not, you do have to have a certain level of sympathy for this film. Because they did the right thing. They pulled it from release when there was this horrible shooting event. And then they drop it in the release during the coronavirus. So, I don't know. Let's talk about the movie. Because I think it absolutely warrants talking about. Because this is a movie that is going under the radar and is still one of the most misunderstood movies of the year. A group of red state Americans find themselves in a game where they are hunted by liberal elite.
What is happening? What is all of this?
Did you see that article? Every year, these liberal elites kidnap a bunch of normal folks like us and hunt us for sport.
It wasn't real. We were joking.
There's been a killing spree. You gotta come here right now.
You actually believed we were hunting human beings for sport. But you are.
Now, you might recognize this movie as being somewhat familiar. The story follows The Most Dangerous Game, which has been adapted in a billion different ways, whether it's a full-on adaptation of the book into the movie, or if it's been inspired by it. There was, and I can't even remember what movie it was, but there was a Robert Reed movie from the 60s that's similar to this, where these teenagers or early 20-something, Robert Reed, of course, you know, Meg Brady from the Brady Bunch was one of the guys in this, and they're hunted on an island. I think it's called Bloodlust. They did a Mystery Science Theater of it sometime in the 90s. And there have been versions of this that have obviously had their own spin-offs, stuff like even Battle Royale or Hunger Games fits into this kind of thing as well. And they've done everything from a Fantasy Island episode I remember seeing once when I was a kid, even like bits in the James Bond movie, Octopussy, there's a whole hunting humans aspect to it. So this idea is nothing new. What they've done is they've deliberately politicized it. And they've not politicized it necessarily in a partisan way. It's actually more of a satire, really. It is framed as a horror movie, and it's got the gore and the violence and the extreme elements to it that make it essentially play like a horror movie. A horror movie, if you want to compare something like The Purge as a horror movie, they're kind of like more of an action movie, but they have so much horror elements to them, you can classify the Purge movies and series as horror movie elements with the violence and the gore, but this also plays as a satire. And in that sense, it's actually very funny. And it's a satire not about either side politically. It's a satire about extremism. It's a satire about taking things too far, whether you're on the left or the right. And it's also a movie that has a lot to say about being aware of what you say and do and share online. And actions have consequences. I'm not just talking about physical actions, but when you share a news story on Facebook, when you forward on some information that might be either inaccurate or completely manufactured, engaging in conspiracy theories and finger pointing, whether you're doing it online on Facebook in a blog post or whether you're just texting your friends, your actions have consequences. And those consequences are the result of somebody else's bad behavior. But this business of saying, oh, I'm just somebody who says what I say and, you know, oh, you free speech. And I mean, yes, we have free speech, but this is a satire about people who don't take the personal responsibility for their free speech. And when you look at it like that, the movie has a lot to say. Now, especially in this political environment, this is going to be the most triggering movie ever. No matter where you fall on the political spectrum, there's going to be some point in this movie where you're going to be like, oh, I don't know about that. That's a load of horse crap. Oh, you don't say that about me and my tribe. And then you're also going to be saying, oh, yeah, that's so true. Or that's, yes, ha, 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 isn't that great? And there's parts of this movie, it reminds me of listening to diehard conservatives talk about Ricky Gervais roasting the Hollywood elite at the Golden Globes. You'll constantly hear complaints about the award season being too political and they don't like to hear celebrities talk about politics, but then suddenly when a celebrity comes up and talks politics that stings the left, suddenly the conservatives all love that, and then the liberals are all mad, you know. So that's what this movie reminds me of. It doesn't have any sacred cows, and it's going to both irk you and get you cheering for it at the same time, because it skewers everybody. And this is not a good people on both sides type argument. This is saying there are wackadoodles on both sides of the political spectrum. And that's what this movie's about. It's not about people in the pragmatic middle or those that aren't so tribalistic that they can't even see somebody else's point of view. And that's unfortunately where we are with social media and the way this works. And that's why this movie is actually kind of important, why it's a good thing for people to watch. The problem is it's going to offend anybody and everybody. Everybody is going to be triggered by this movie, even though you shouldn't. If you're upset by this movie, you've missed the point, because it's kind of brilliant satire for our day. I just don't think it's going to be appreciated because it's in the thick of it. Give this movie 20 years and people are going to look back at it and go, this was actually kind of brilliant. So I'm going to have to say The Hunt actually rocks.
It rocks. Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's continue on with the movie reviews and let's talk about Bloodshot. Vin Diesel plays a soldier who is killed in action and given a second chance at life by grafting healing nanobots into his body.
What is this place?
I'm sorry to be the one to tell you this, but you got yourself killed. At RST, we'd rebuild the most important assets in the U.S. military.
Soldiers like yourself.
You're the first who we've successfully managed to bring back.
But improved, enhanced.
With the technology in your veins, you have an army inside you that will not only make you stronger, it will heal you instantly.
Or it.
Now tell me, do you remember anything?
First of all, this movie's terrible. But not in a bad way. I think that's going to be on the cover box. They're talking about, they wanted to get that quote for the posters in the theater, but they decided to go with a different tagline. But no, this movie's terrible. It's a terrible movie. It's just one excuse after another to show people in cool badass outfits punching things and doing this crazy action. There's no real depth of character. It relies on just the fact that Vin Diesel's kind of likable on screen, because there's nothing to him as a character. There's a point where he's all mad because he's like, no, I'm more than that, but we don't see any of that in his character. But this movie's fun. I like these smaller science fiction movies that hit the theaters and nobody remembers. I used to go to these 24-hour movie marathons as a kid. I've gone in the past. I just haven't been able to. I can't do 24 hours in a movie theater anymore. I just don't have that sort of stamina in my middle age. But they still have these events, and I always love these kind of movies because they're throwaway, they're disposable, they're Saturday afternoon watching, they're not to be taken seriously. And you know, the Vin Diesel, I have a great respect for Vin Diesel, not because of the Fast and Furious movies. That's easy. Those things are huge blockbusters. It's easy to continue to make those. I love the fact that Vin Diesel comes out and says, hey, I'm going to make this crappy pseudo sci-fi action movie that really doesn't make a whole lot of sense. It's just an excuse for me to wear a tank top and flex my muscles and do some special effects. He loves this kind of garbage. And I love the fact you can tell that there's a passion of his to make this stuff. And that's kind of what makes the movie fun. These are like the Chronicle of Riddick movies. All three of those Riddick movies are terrible. But they're kind of fun to watch. It's certainly the last one. I don't know. The second one is a little bit overblown. But I respect the heck out of Vin Diesel for doing these kind of things. I'd love to see him just keep making these movies, do two or three a year, and I would love it. It's sort of like Jason Statham doing tough guy action movies all the time. And he just it's a job for him, and I think that's great. So even though this is a terrible movie, I'm going to say it kind of rocks because I had fun watching.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Devs, the box office, and the home cinema roundup featuring 21 Bridges.
Stop it now.
Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's finish up the show with one more review, and we're going to see more of this on this show, mainly because, like I said in the first segment, that the next 2 weeks there's nothing coming out in the theaters. I don't know if theaters are going to close. I just think it's just going to end up being a slower time in theater. It's going to be a regular March in theaters. It used to be that March was kind of a dead time in theaters. I think we're just going back to that for this year. It was his throwback, 2020. I don't think theaters are going to die. I don't think they're going to close theaters nationwide. I think there's going to be a lot of people that are going to choose to stay home from theaters. But right now there's, you know, I mean, with the exception of Onward, which was hopefully going to be a big hit, but I think that took a hit from just people not wanting to collect in theaters. But one of the things that is going to boom over the next couple weeks for sure is the streaming services. And there's Netflix, there's Amazon Prime, there's Hulu. Those are the three big ones to get. Now, there's Disney Plus, and Disney Plus is great, especially if you've got kids. There's tons and tons of kids' content on there. In terms of new stuff, I mean, I know that they've got some, I think they're doing the new Clone Wars stuff on Disney Plus. The Mandalorian's all wrapped up, but you can go back and rewatch that. You can watch all the Star Wars movies and all the Marvel movies. Those are on there. But that's not the critical one for this time. I mean, I would say start mining the series on Hulu and Netflix and Amazon. I know I am. There's a lot of stuff that I'm going to watch on demand and on discs that I have at home. But one of them I want to highlight is, just like I talked about I'm Not Okay With This last week as a Netflix program, I want to talk about one on Hulu, and that is Devs. A young computer programmer investigates a mysterious tech company after her boyfriend apparently commits suicide on their property.
This is your station?
But what am I actually doing here?
I'm not going to tell you. Don't worry. You're going to figure it out.
The last time I saw him, he was headed toward Devs. And then he disappears. Something bad happened to him.
You know what happened to him.
If you came for answers,
ask me what you don't know.
What is Devs?
This is packaged in what's called FX on Hulu. And FX on Hulu is just Hulu saying, hey, we've got all the FX programming. And they've already had a whole bunch of it on there. If you wanted to watch It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia and The League and all that kind of stuff, they're already on there. But they're doing a partnership with FX, which you're going to start seeing more of in the streaming things, because people are going to try to consolidate their brand. And Hulu's always been a TV thing. And I think I talked about last week, Netflix, I think, is going for the younger market. Amazon kind of straddles that in the sense that you can buy stuff, rent things on demand individually, as well as have Prime subscription. So each one is kind of staking out its own brand, and I would say those are the three you want to get. And then there's some fun stuff you can get. You can get Crackle for free. You can get actually Tubi TV has a lot of really good stuff on there if you're willing to put up with the advertising. But Devs is created and written and directed by Alex Gardner, who did movies like Ex Machina, and he did Annihilation the other year. He's known for his very high concept stuff. And that's one of the things I love about this series. This series is very high concept. It does not dumb things down for an audience. It also doesn't try and speed through anything. It's a slow, deliberate reveal. And there's little things in the first couple episodes that I'm sure are going to play out later on. Now, I've only seen the first three episodes. Those are the only ones that are available on the service, because they're dropping them every Thursday. I think there's 8 episodes in the first season. This really has me intrigued. My biggest complaint is the main character, Lily, who's the one who's doing the investigation because her boyfriend got killed. I just don't like this. The character is just nothing. I'm not a fan of the actress. I think the actress is very bland and almost waifish. It has no, there's nothing to her. I mean, she's like a saltine cracker that if it rains on it, it's all just going to, you know, melt away. And I think they could have had a stronger character. Now, they got Nick Offerman playing the guy who runs this development company. And he's really intriguing, because it's a very far cry from Ron Swanson on Parks and Rec, but it has that weirdness to him, and it has that love of seclusion that Ron Swanson does have. Although one of the first scenes in the series, you see him eating like alfalfa or spinach or something, and you're like, well, that Ron Swanson would never do that. So it's got a great cast. It's got some really high concept stuff. It's not revealing its hand too quickly, and I think that's a good thing. There's still a lot of mysteries, and there's parts of the first episode that I don't really quite understand that I think need to get filled out as we go on. So I'm fascinated by this series, even if there's elements to it that I don't particularly attach myself to. There's elements to it that I'm not super interested in. I'm going to watch the heck out of it. It's unlike like Carnival Row. That one was just a slag to get through. I couldn't get into the story. Same thing with The Witcher. I just wasn't interested in it. I didn't think it had, was cohesive. The non-cohesive nature of Devs, I feel, has a purpose rather than it being poor writing. So I'm very curious. I'm going to continue watching this, but I got to say, Devs totally rocks.
It rocks.
Excellent.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk really quickly about the box office. This is going to be interesting over the next couple of weeks. First of all, last weekend, Onward did win the box office with about $40 million, just under $40 million. And The Way Back got $8 million. The Way Back was not, well, that was a disappointing number. Onward was a suppressed number. I think it was on expectation. But considering we were already brewing corona fears and people didn't want to be in enclosed spaces, I think that absolutely had an effect on Onward. And the box office on Onward, I think, is one of the reasons why suddenly this week Disney pulled everything from its slate and they're shutting down their parks and they're shutting down their cruise line for a limited duration. I think they're saying, hey, we're just going to shut everything down and take a breather on some of this. But, you know, this week, I don't know what's going to win. I have no idea how many people are going to go see movies. I went and saw Bloodshot in the theaters, and there are like five other people in the theater with me. I don't know if that has more to do with the coronavirus or just that's the kind of movie Bloodshot is. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the home cinema roundup. This week, I want to spotlight 21 Bridges. This came out a couple weeks ago on DVD, and I'm going through some of my older stuff, and this isn't that old, but I wanted to watch some movies that I hadn't seen in the theaters and hadn't had a chance to cover on DVD and Blu-ray. There's going to be more of that coming up in the next couple weeks. So Chadwick Boseman stars as an NYPD detective who tries to catch two small-time cop killers by isolating them in Manhattan.
We will catch these guys in the next 3 or 4 hours. They vanish. How are you going to do this?
There are 21 bridges in and out of the island. Shut them down.
What island?
Manhattan.
They told me you were the guy who kills killers.
Beautiful. What could go wrong? You got a trigger.
You better have perfect diction calling me a trigger.
This was a setup.
Call it what you want.
I just did.
If you go down this road, you're looking over your shoulder the rest of your life.
I'd rather look the devil in the eye.
This falls in that very cliche genre, in that category that we've seen dozens and dozens of movies. And the thing that is a little different is it's trying to be a launching pad for an action movie with Chadwick Boseman, because he's done biopics, you know, Thurgood Marshall, he did Jackie Robinson, he did James Brown. And then, of course, he did Black Panther, and that put him on the map. But this was, I think, an attempt to see if he could carry a movie outside of the Marvel Universe. And I mean, he's okay with it. I just don't think they give him much to do. He's almost too stoic. He's too somber. It's less about him and more about the people that are running from him. And I think that's just a poor placement for him. His character he plays is kind of that maverick cop who does things different, but it's just not well written. Same thing. You got Sienna Miller in there and her character's very throwaway. It's pointless. And that's the problem. The bad guys or the people that he's chasing, they have a more interesting story than Boseman's character. And I think that's part of the problem that runs as part of it is also, this movie is, in the context of the political argument of unarmed criminals getting shot, does mix us up. I mean, we're not in the 70s anymore. And even though it tries to make a point of that, I don't think it works. This probably would have been a better movie if it had come out in the 90s. But with, you know, some of the politics behind the police and some of the things that they have going on underlying a lot of this, complicates what would otherwise be just a genre piece from the 90s. So this one just didn't hold together as well as it could have. And that's because cop dramas have changed over the last 20, 30 years. So I'm going to have to say that 21 Bridges kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay. Also out this week on DVD and Blu-ray, we have Uncut Gems, Bombshell, Charlie's Angels, and Spies in Disguise. And that's it. I need to go. Next week, nothing. Nada. Zip. There's nothing out there in the theaters. Thanks, coronavirus. But don't worry. I'll have some surprises for you. I will not abandon you all in your time of need. You will always be able to come to me for movie advice, TV advice, all the stuff to watch, but we'll talk about that next week. And until then, have a fat time at the movies or at home.